Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The race is on, and Formula One has taken further action to protect itself while the races are off, with a raft of measures designed to ensure the financial damage of the COVID-19 pandemic is kept under control. I'm your host, Ed Straw, and Scott Mitchell joins me for this special extra episode, delving into the changes that have been made, and the ones that might still be to come. Scott, so this is yet another busy day, isn't it? Some big announcements, significant things for the future of Formula One, plenty to keep you busy on the news trail, certainly.
Yes, it's nice of them to be able to give us so much stuff to work on, as it's helping tick off the days, isn't it, as this ever-increasing and indefinite hiatus continues. I have no idea if the percentage of days completed is actually increasing, though, because it feels like for every day I do, another week gets added on to the time between the racing resuming.
Yeah, it's a long way off. I think we should be in Vietnam by now, shouldn't we? That's where we should.
Yeah,
be.
We should. Thanks for the reminder. instead, I'm day 12 stuck in my flat in Stockholm.
Yeah, well, plenty more days to come, as you say. So let's keep focused on the matter at hand. Now, the FIA announced today various things. So let's kind of break them down. First up is the general one, that they've changed it so that they just need a 60% majority of teams to make changes to rules for this season rather than unanimity. This seems to be kind of a practical measure, doesn't it, to ensure that that changes that need to be made can be made.
Yeah, absolutely. So the FIA has basically had this tumultuous few weeks where they've had lots of requests for postponement or cancellation of races. And this goes beyond Formula One, obviously, but we'll speak about it in an F1 context. So you have this situation now where the number of races being postponed or cancelled is piling up, and the amount of time that's left to fit them all back in is going down. And that's obviously going to create a really, really horrible situation later in the year. There's going to be a lot of tough decisions to be made. There's going to be a lot of decisions that need to be made quickly. And basically, in order for the FIA to be able to deal with this properly, they've basically given Jean Todt, on behalf of the FIA, emergency powers to just crack on and do stuff. We know that from an F1 context, we'd reported already that one example of this would be the teams agreeing to waive their right to consultancy on calendar changes and it being rescheduled. So now that's the FIA and F1 are free to crack on with that. But it does extend further now. And the way the FIA put it is that the changes have been made to the current sporting regs. They've been approved by the World Motorsport Council. And this gives flexibility to the FIA and F1, quote, to react to the crisis and organise a race calendar that best safeguards the commercial value of the championship and contains costs as much as possible. I think that says all you need to know, really, doesn't it, about the restrictions or pressures, I should say, that are currently on the championship and the 10 teams.
Yeah, it's very much a period where they're trying to pause as much of the F1 economy as they can to avoid spending money that they may not ultimately have. It's very sensible to retrench in these periods, especially when we don't know how long it's going to be before things come to pass. But although it's emergency powers, it doesn't mean that the FIA has got a totally free hand in everything. They'll still need, for certain other measures, they'll still need the team majority agreement. But it stops this need for unanimity on everything, which can be polluted by politics and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so basically what happens now is that certain articles within the sporting regs will now only require 60% support amongst the teams. So again, it's that word flexibility again. It gives the rulemakers a little bit more power to push stuff through. And this 60% rule will apply to various measures, including, for example, race weekend formats. So if they do decide that two-day events are the way to proceed, bin off Friday practice so that we can have a run of two or three races, which I think might actually be quite, if we do get going again in 2020, let's say the season doesn't start until August or September, I think we're going to be in a situation where you might have a run of two or three weekends with races, a weekend off, two or three weekends with races, a weekend off. And to make that sort of schedule, that's only hypothetical, realistic, you're going to need to cut Fridays, I think. So that's an example there. So just in case one or two teams or three teams even hold out, now basically you just need 60% support.
Yeah, ultimately, knocking out the Friday, it doesn't completely offset the effect of having those runs of races, but it will just create a tiny bit of leeway that'll just make it slightly less taxing than otherwise would be. And obviously, Formula One, the last thing we heard from Chase Carey is that they're still hopeful of getting 15 to 18 races, he said. 18 races is probably quite optimistic at this stage, but we do also know that they're open to extending the season into January, so there's a few places where they're not in the Northern Hemisphere winter where they could hold the races there that will actually be a good way to fit in a little bit more. So yeah, it's all about getting this number of races. The minimum number of races, of course, is 8 according to the sporting regulations, but they'll want to get in a lot more than that because the more races, the more revenue. And ultimately, that's what this is about, isn't it? The economic situation.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about the calendar, and 18 races is definitely optimistic. 15 might be achievable. If it goes below that, we also have a little bit of clarity over how that will impact certain things within the regulations, like the engine allocations. We know that you've had these restrictions in place for the various parts, combustion engine, MGU-H, MGU-K, turbocharger, and the other bits and bobs. Control electronics and energy store. I'll mention them because I made that sound like I didn't know what they were and I was forgetting. But I was actually trying to be quick, and now instead I've made it much longer than it needed to be, which is classic me. But the way it will work now is there'll be it's a little bit of a sliding scale, I suppose. The restrictions or the limits are put in place based on a full season. At the moment, obviously, it was going to be 22 races, so you were meant to have free of everything except for the control electronics and the energy store, I think, which was two of everything across the 22 races. Now, if there's 14 races or fewer, you'll only have two of everything to use. And if there's 11 races or fewer, you'll have two of everything except the MGUK, control electronics or energy store. Now, that's obviously worst case scenario. I think it would be very, very problematic if we only had 10 or 11 races. But the fact that they've gone so far as being so specific in the regulations, instead of changing it nearer the time, if you know, cross the bridge when we come to it, shows that they must think it's at least a possibility that we get to the point where we're getting down to the absolute bare minimum number of races.
And it's important to have that clarity. Because of course, especially when it comes to engine components, there are some things that have quite a long lead time to manufacture. So that the clearer the framework is about how much they'll need to produce, etc., the easier it will be. Because then they won't be running around panicking trying to set things up. And obviously, the calendar's moving kind of further and further back as we speak. 8 races down, as you said already, and it's hard to imagine that more races won't be postponed before we start getting towards a proper calendar. Now, there is also, as part of these measures, confirmation that there's an engine development shutdown and also a freeze on aero development for future regs. So that just limits the amount of work they can do. This, again, is just to stop the engine manufacturers and the teams from spending money, isn't it?
Yeah, so this was so let's start with the aerodynamic development ban. So this relates to the new technical regulations, which obviously have already been delayed from 2021 to 2022. And we'll come back to these in a little bit in this podcast because the fun never stops. But the point is, basically, by delaying these new technical rules to 2022, in theory, what happened there is you could theoretically have an extra, well, however many, what, another 8, 9, 10 months worth of development on the rules this year, just a free hit. But with everyone in different stages of lockdown and then obviously the shutdowns coming into play, plus the fact that the whole point of delaying those rules is for cost reasons. We don't want teams throwing money at the aero development for 2022. So that has been pushed back. That ban started on last Saturday, March 28th, And I think it's in place until the early months of next year. February, I think, was, they haven't explicitly stated it, the FIA, but February time was what we were hearing before. So that's been done. That's aerodynamic development banned until next year. That's good. That stops, that saves teams from themselves almost. And then the other side of it, as you said, is, yeah, adding the engine manufacturers to the shutdown period, because the engine manufacturers aren't normally part of that. It's the 10 teams, because the engine manufacturers adhere to different rules in different countries, and it's difficult. It's just not ever been something that gets brought into these restrictions. That's changed now. We know that Ferrari and Renault already had to close their facilities because of government restrictions. Mercedes and Honda had certain practices in place as well to manage their workloads. But now what will happen is the FIA has laid out quite strict instructions that they'll need to follow in terms of what can and can't be done. I think it will be applied slightly differently based on location, because different countries have different rules ultimately in place for what companies can and can't do in terms of working their employees. So that will be determined individually between each manufacturer. But in addition to the teams not being able to do anything for now, the engine manufacturers are frozen, so to speak. So it's a curious situation. I know everyone's probably sick of hearing the word unprecedented, but that is the world we live in at the moment, and F1 and now the engine manufacturers are not exempt from that.
And I think it's really important, because this takes off the table temptation, should we say, to try and steal a march on others, to throw more money that they may not have, to take financial risks in order to gain a competitive advantage. And I think it's important to take this off the table, because it's very easy for teams to either think, oh, we can gain an advantage if we throw a bit more money than we should at this, or alternatively for them to decide they have to because they're convinced all their competitors are. You know, even in times like this, these are competitive animals, and that's why I think all the teams will actually be quite happy to have agreed to this and know that, right, it's level playing field, lockdown, we're not going to spend money on that. And of course, you know, aero development, engine development, it's hugely expensive. It involves running wind tunnels, design work time, all so many things, model making for wind tunnels, you know, parts manufacture for engines. There's huge amounts of things that just cost money to do. It's not just about your staff sitting there thinking, should we say, there's a cost attached to everything. So it's a very, very positive move. We'll take a very quick break and then come back with more on these measures. Right, well, welcome back. Scott, without further ado, we'll get on with more changes. One thing that the FIA has confirmed is that the DAS ban, the dual-axis steering system that Mercedes has pioneered, is definitely banned next year. And while people might think that it was already banned because it was banned for 21, when they deferred the 21 regs to 22 and carried over the 20 regs, it was a bit of a grey area whether this would change. But now we know, no DAS in 2021.
Yeah, I don't understand what's so confusing about it, Ed. This was banned for 2021, but then 2021 moved to 2022. So this thing that was banned for 2021 might have been doable for 2021, but now we've had confirmation that it's not allowed to be done in 2021. What's confusing about that?
That's a good tongue twister, isn't it?
It is. I'm really proud of myself, actually, for not tripping up over that one.
I should say, I could see the concentration on your face, so you were very, and the delight at the end of it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a sensible measure, and it's important, I think, as well that they've clarified it, because when the dual axis steering system made its debut in testing, which was mega, I loved seeing how wide eyed it made lots of other teams, and obviously it set the media world alight. There was no specific there was nothing emphatic from the FIA saying it was or wasn't going to be allowed beyond 2020. And what we'd had from Mercedes was the indication that the development of the device included many conversations with the FIA going back a long time. It wasn't something that the FIA was finding out at testing, the same as us. And the FIA never turned around and said, yes, that's correct, this device is legal, but we've outlawed it for next year. However, the first draft of the 2021 technical rules did have a section in it related to steering that appeared to rule out the DAS. And what's happened now is, in this interim 21 season, where the chassis and other components will get carried over from 2020 to 2021, because the new technical rules have been pushed back, there was a bit of a grey area. It was, okay, well, is the DAS going to be part of that? What they've done is they've taken that bit from the new technical rules. They've taken that part and applied it to the current technical rule. So as of next year, the DAS will explicitly be outlawed, and the FIA has now in its communication of these changes explicitly referred to dual axis steering systems as not being allowed from next year. So it's not anything particularly controversial, because this is something that Mercedes would need to be on board with ultimately, but it's a good bit of important box ticking, shall we say.
Yeah, it's tidying up, because at times like this, when there's lots of things to shift, there have been cases in the past when things have been overlooked, shall we say. So it's good just to get that done, paperwork done, signed, sealed, delivered. And that also means that teams now know that if they're going to develop a DAS to rival Mercedes, it's got a very limited shelf life. That'll probably be doubly good news for Red Bull, because as we've discussed, there's a video on our YouTube channel, in fact, where we discuss about why Red Bull, with the way a car is currently, wouldn't be able to adopt the DAS, even if it was to try and develop it. It would require some pretty major changes. So it just means that, again, that's another temptation reduced, shall we say. So you know, if you're going to do the DAS, it's only going to pay off for a few months, probably later this year to the end of the season.
And what I will just add to that, Ed, as well, is with this ongoing hiatus and the fact that the summer shutdown, the summer shutdown that's taking place across March and April, that could be extended. And there does seem to be a broad agreement between the teams to avoid getting into a needless development race while certain restrictions are in place beyond what the FIA mandate. I actually don't know if anyone's going to be in a position to develop the DAS for this season. So it's kind of a curious situation where it's sort of swung one way than the other, this, hasn't it? Mercedes has this amazing revelation. Is it going to be something that they have indefinitely that nobody else can have? Then you have a bit of a break with a few races postponed. So you think, oh, maybe this has given the other teams a bit of a window to develop the DAS and have it for the rest of the year. And then the severity of the situation comes into play. Everyone gets placed on lockdown or into a shutdown scenario. And it becomes clear that they won't be able to develop this. And then we get the final confirmation that it's banned for 2021 anyway. So I wonder, especially given Red Bull said it was keen to protest the DAS in Australia, and obviously that doesn't guarantee anything, I wonder if this is the final nail in the coffin now for anyone other than Mercedes running the DAS if and when the 2020 season gets underway.
Very, very possibly. You'd have to be very confident that you're going to get a good number of races if you're going to go for it. I guess if you're Red Bull or Ferrari, they're the ones with the biggest resource to go for it. But obviously Red Bull, it brings out so many other problems. I suspect they wouldn't have time with the compromises that would come with it to get the most out of it. So yeah, it may well have changed things. Now, the other thing, this is not something that's currently happened, but Christian Horner, in an interview with the BBC with Andrew Benson, talked about the fact that teams are in favour of potentially deferring the regulations another year. So the 2021 regulations that were in 2022 could go back to 2023, which it shows the scale of this problem and the financial impact, doesn't it? Because all the teams and F1 as a whole just want to avoid committing themselves to these big spending points, etc. So it could be a very pragmatic move to do that, just to, again, buy themselves time, not put financial pressure on themselves.
I agree, and I think I've seen a few people slightly misinterpret what's going on, and they seem to think that it's an overreaction, because it's basically a few months of delays here adding up to a two-year delay in major new technical rules. But it's not about that. It's not that the time loss now needs to be added on at the end. It's about the fact that the F1 teams, they basically borrow against their future selves, don't they? Because the prize money is paid in arrears. So basically, all the problems that we're facing now with the races not happening, that's going to be felt in 12 months' time, when the teams have been budgeting based on getting X amount of money over the next few years. That's suddenly going to come down. They're going to have less money to play with. And while deferring the rules protected them immediately, now it stops them having to try and persevere with development of a new car for 2021 while all of this madness is going on. Only deferring it to 2022 means that next year is when they'll have to be developing this all new car to all new technical rules, and they're going to have less money to play with because of the problems they're facing this year. So deferring everything to 2023 is actually, I think, quite a good solution, because we're not in any rush for this. It would be silly for F1 to have a short-term victory and then cause itself problems further down the line. So this is all about pragmatism. If you do it the way Horner's talking about, which seems to have broad agreement from the teams but needs to be rubber stamped and signed off, etc., you're going to have a situation where the teams can ride out the storm of 2020, hopefully find a way to get through next year when they have reduced payments, and they'll do that by freezing other car components, and maybe, and they'll still have the budget cap in place next year, and maybe that budget cap will be even lower. So hopefully everyone's a bit more competitive with one another. And then in 2022, when everything has hopefully over the next 18 months started to settle, that's when you go into the development phase of the new car. The new car comes on steam in 2023. We're long clear of this pandemic and this global crisis. And hopefully F1's new era can start without a big cloud hanging over it or any of the teams struggling to survive.
Yeah, and it just makes sense because obviously the revenue the teams get from their performance overall is based on the teams sharing a percentage of F1's revenue. So that's where F1... as commercial rights holder Liberty Media and the F1 teams are bound and are genuinely in it together, because the F1 teams share a certain slice of the cake. So we don't know right now how big that cake is going to be. It's unquestionably going to be smaller, but every race that doesn't take place, that's your cake is smaller straight away. So we don't necessarily know exactly what's going on with the broadcasters as well, because obviously F1 will be wanting full payment from the broadcasters for their TV deals. But as it stands, they're not giving a full season. So there'll be all sorts of talk going on in the background about that as well.
Well, I heard recently that one of the stipulations, and obviously all the contracts are different, so this doesn't mean it's universal guaranteed, but I know that there's at least one broadcaster that's looking in terms of if a season has 15 races, that's considered a full season. So I wonder if that's why that sort of lower range of the target started at 15 races, because that's what F1 considers to be a full season. That's what it is contractually. Obviously, this is all it's all a little bit of a guesstimation, but it will be interesting to see what the repercussions are there. And obviously, prize money is one thing, but there are also sponsor commitments that the teams have, and that will be based on, you know, success. The driver contracts will be based on you know, bonuses and for performance and results and wins and points and all of that. So there's loads of ways that you make all of these agreements based on there being 21, 22 races. This is meant to be a record season. It's certainly going to go down in the history books this season, if and when it ever happens, but not for the reasons anyone expected.
Yeah, well, there's just so many strands to this. Everything gets impacted. You know, all the sponsorship deals, F1's wider sponsorship deals, you know, paddock club revenues. Everything is impacted, and that's before we even start mentioning all the whole kind of wider ecosystem. You know, there's all sorts of particularly in the UK, there's loads of small businesses and small companies that do work for F1 teams who will be impacted by this kind of thing as well, and they're kind of outside of that that loop as well. So it's far-reaching, and this is why it's very satisfying to see a really long-term view taken, and rather than waiting until F1 is forced into making these decisions, they're saying, right, actually, it'd be pragmatic to do this, 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 and this. And so the measures taken over the past few months, a few weeks rather, have been absolutely, absolutely on the money. So let's hope they keep progressing in that way. But the fact that they've created a mechanism to make it easy to change means we can expect further changes even for this year, potentially, can't we, Scott?
Yeah, Ed, I completely agree. This is not going to be the extent of the disruption. I think we're going to see changes across the board. I think we're going to see further races postponed and cancelled. I think we're going to see a dramatically different calendar to what we expected in 2020. I'd be surprised if there aren't more measures implemented by the FIA and F1 and the teams to try and protect themselves, whether that's going to be the budget cap reduced, whether that's going to be the rules deferred to 2023, whether that's going to be more and more parts frozen. Next year, maybe the engines will get homologated as well at the end of 2020 and then used until 22 or 23. I don't know, but I'd be amazed if this is the last we're here on one of these podcasts discussing some measures being implemented to save F1 in a time of crisis.
Yeah, I suspect there's going to be plenty more to be done. Of course, the race will have all the latest news about what's going on in Formula One. There's still plenty happening, and we've got loads of material on there for you to delve into. If you do like our podcast, of course, we want you to subscribe to the Race F1 podcast if you haven't already done so. But we've also got the Gary Anderson F1 show out every week with the former Jaguar and Jordan technical director. We've got the Bring Back V10s podcast, which is classic F1 stories. So if you head to that, we've got a two-part episode talking about Prost's fallout with Ferrari in his event potential sacking, really delving into those old stories. We've also got the Race Formula E podcast covering all things electric racing, and the Race MotoGP podcast. So even in these difficult times when the world's in a slightly strange situation, there's loads for you to listen to there. And do check out our YouTube channel as well. So stay home, stay safe, and we'll see you again very soon.